Hi there, my name is Ryan Waite, and I'm the General Manager for High Performance Computing at Microsoft. Thank you for coming to this presentation today on technical computing and Microsoft's initiatives in the technical computing space. I want to start by saying that we've been working in the technical computing space on the HPC server side of things for about 6 years. That's when we actually started the project, and there were a number of people that we've worked with over time that have given us a lot of great advice. And I'm sure that when we started, there were a lot of people that were questioning how well we would do it at getting into the HPC industry. And I think we've demonstrated now that we've done well in that space. What I'm here to talk about today is our investments in the technical computing industry. And I think what we'll see is these are Microsoft's first big, significant contributions to the technical computing industry. It's more than just HPC server. It's about everything that we do. So let's get started. There are a couple of different things that are impacting the way we think about technical computing and what Microsoft can do to support the general technical computing industry. The first big industry trend is the sheer size of data that we're working with. This impacts everybody in the technical computing space, from people that are doing seismic work and seismic analysis, to people in the bioinformatics space, to people in computational finance. In fact, a good example of this is, think about the Sanger Institute in the UK that is doing computational biology work, that's actually sequencing people's DNA. When they have all of their machines running, they generate 120 terabytes per week. It's overwhelming, and the kind of computation they want to do with that is one of these kinds of genome-wide association studies where you can look at 10 or 15 people that have a particular kind of disease and look at their DNA and then compare that to the genomes of several hundred people that do not have those types of disorders and figure out what's different. So you're looking at these very large data sets and being able to do big scale data analytics across big data sets. That's just one example in the computational biology space. If we look in finance, we'll see that terabytes of data is generated every day just in click data, in the kind of, or tick data, the kind of data that's generated for every single transaction, be it stock transactions, options transactions, different kinds of stuff that goes on in the different dark pools around the computational finance space. All of us are struggling with this kind of data. And when you look at something like this, you know, a zettabyte of data, as we can see on this slide, the question becomes, how do we deal with that? We can't keep all of it. We have to understand what's important to keep and what we let go of in that space. But a zettabyte is the amount of data that we expect to generate as a population in the next year. It's overwhelming, and it's overwhelming for all of us. Now, a supercomputing slide wouldn't be complete unless you actually have a Moore's Law slide. And what you can see here is the traditional Moore's Law kind of material. It shows that the number of transistors continues to increase over time. That's all good. We can see that the frequency of those processors continues to increase, which really means processors keep getting faster. And in fact, this has been called the free lunch in the past, that all of us could build faster and faster applications, and applications with more and more features, because the processors kept getting faster. Like, everything was pretty good. So what we saw happen is that while the number of transistors has continued to increase, the speed or the frequency of those processors has plateaued. These processors really aren't getting faster anymore. And in fact, if you look at the modern processors that we have now, these, you know, 4 and soon 8 core kinds of processors, they're actually a little bit slower than the processors we had a couple of years ago. Not a lot, but just a little bit. But we've plateaued in terms of speed. So that's another problem. What's changed is the number of cores has increased. And you could say the free lunch is over. And there's a great article called The Free Lunch is Over by Herb Setter. I encourage people to take a look at it. What he talks about is the fact that all of us have to understand how to do multi-core programming as we go forward and take advantage of all these multiple cores that are showing up on a single box. Now, why is Microsoft concerned about this? We're concerned because if we as an industry cannot adapt to this multi-core world, the computing industry slows down. It may even stop. It could turn into a white goods industry. Like, none of us go off and buy a brand new dishwasher because it has this great new dry cycle. We buy a new dishwasher because the old one broke. If we can't figure out how to write multi-core applications that continue to get faster and faster and use these multi-core systems, the speed of these applications stalls. and nobody will buy new hardware, new software, until their old systems break. This would be a disaster for us as an industry. So it's not really about how does Office or Windows take advantage of multi-core. It's about how do all of us as a computing industry embrace the multi-core revolution that's coming. Otherwise, we're all in trouble. And this will affect everybody from enterprise applications to HPC applications to desktop productivity applications. So what can Microsoft bring to this equation? Well, it's not just HPC, as I mentioned at the beginning of this presentation. It's about a lot of assets that Microsoft has. We have assets that can help on the client, assets that can help in the cluster, and assets that can help in the cloud space. Let's start by talking about the client. The client as we know it is, you can think of this as any kind of Windows box. It can be a single workstation sitting underneath somebody's desk, or it can be a server, a single server in a data center. Earlier this year, we released Visual Studio 2010. This is a great product. There are a number of really beautiful things inside of Visual Studio. Actually, it's a beautiful product. It's stunning visually, but there are a number of really fantastic features. Some of the features that are most exciting to me are around parallel application development. 15 years ago, I was a developer on Microsoft Exchange Server, and we were trying to go from two CPUs to four CPUs. These are on these old DEC Alpha boxes that many people listening to this presentation have actually seen them. They look like small refrigerators. It was cutting-edge technology at the time. But the struggle for us was getting that scalability to work. Two CPUs to four CPUs. And it wasn't that we didn't understand how to do multi-core programming. We were geniuses at writing up lots of threads. We probably had 30 or 40 threads running at any particular time. The thing that killed us was something called context switching. And context switching is where you're running on a particular CPU for some period of time, everything is going well, and then you make some sort of call to a function, which probably calls another function, which probably calls another function, which calls the operating system to do some sort of I/O, like read something out of the disk. Well, when you stall like that and you have to wait for the data to come back, the operating system, being an efficient operating system, it puts you in a pause state and starts running somebody else on that CPU. Well, when you finally wake up after you get that data back, you may be scheduled onto a different CPU. So you have to switch from one CPU to the other CPU. You have to move all of that state or do a context switch to move from one CPU to another CPU. And while it's not typically too bad, if you're doing it hundreds of times per second, it is going to impact how fast your application can go, and more importantly, impact the scalability of your application if you're trying to go from two CPUs to four CPUs, as we were doing. It's very problematic. More than that, it's really hard to understand when this is happening. I was a performance developer. I understood how to look for this type of stuff. But for the general developer population, all of these people that have to embrace multi-core programming, how do they see this kind of stuff? How do they understand these scalability limitations in their applications? Visual Studio 2010 provides tools that help people see that. One of the tools that I love the most is the Parallel Performance Analyzer, and you'll see some screenshots here that show that Parallel Performance Analyzer. You can see your thread running on one of your cores, and when it switches, you can see that visually, and you can then zoom in to see what function call you called that ended up causing that context switch to occur. It's fantastic, and it gives a level of visibility into multi-core programming that has rarely been available to application developers. And this is built right into Visual Studio. It's a fantastic feature. The second thing that we built in Visual Studio 2010 is a set of extensions that enable application developers, the general population of application developers, to take advantage of multi-core programming techniques. For example, a lot of times we want to write a for loop and have that for loop automatically parallelize across the four cores or eight cores or however many cores we have on a particular machine. This is difficult. Like, if you actually want to do this yourself, it's probably at least 50 or 100 lines of code to create the locking and synchronization routines to scale that application across all those cores. And it's the kind of thing that we probably get wrong the first time. I've written code like that, and either the lock that you generate is too coarse, in which case you have bad scalability, or it's too granular, and you run into these horrible problems of data corruption. Writing that kind of code is pretty ugly, and we probably get it wrong. So what we do in Visual Studio is we provide new technologies, and these are extensions to the way that people might write something like a for loop. So instead of writing for and the variable I and however many iterations you're going to do, you write something that's like parallel dot for, and then that number of iterations you want to do. It looks just like a for loop, but you put this parallel dot part in front of it. And what we'll do on the back end is we'll take the body of that loop and parallelize it to run across multiple cores. You don't have to understand anything about the locking algorithms for doing that. You don't have to understand anything about, you know, the tricks of multi-core programming. We take care of all of that for you using something that we call Concert, or the concurrency runtime. Anyway, this is another great extension in Visual Studio. I'd encourage everybody to take a look at Visual Studio 2010. It's a fantastic product. It's not just about what we do at Microsoft, though. There are a lot of other companies that are building great multi-core programming tools, and those tools plug right into Visual Studio 2010. One of those tools is Parallel Insight from NVIDIA. If you're doing GPU programming, you've probably run into the CUDA programming model created by NVIDIA. It's a great programming model, and the tools that you use for writing those kinds of applications plug right into Visual Studio. So if you like the kind of IntelliSense features that we have, or the way that our debugger works, or any of the features that are part of Visual Studio, they're available to you with Visual Studio 2010 and Parallel Insight running inside of Visual Studio. We've also worked closely with Intel, and Intel's new Parallel Studio suite plugs right into Visual Studio 2010 as well. So if you want to use their concurrency checker, any of their kinds of tools for doing performance analysis, their kernel math kernel libraries, all of those components plug right into Visual Studio 2010. Again, providing this comprehensive set of tools all inside of Visual Studio for being able to do multi-core programming. We're really doing a lot at Microsoft to make sure that multi-core programming is something that the general population is able to take advantage of. So let's move on to the cluster. We can kind of think about the cluster as multiple nodes, multiple boxes that have multiple cores inside of them, but they're now all working in harmony with each other, and they have a distributed memory model. Well, just this year, in fact, just in September, we launched Windows HPC Server 2008 R2. The R2 part of that name says that we're built on top of Windows Server 2008 R2. But for this is our third release. This release enables a whole new category of computations on top of Windows. Some of the work that we've focused on probably most heavily has been the performance work inside of Windows, making sure that Windows HPC Server provides the same kind of performance as other HPC solutions. We can see that across the benchmarks that we've done, we can see that in the improvements in our MPI stack and in our high-speed networking components. This is a strong release from a performance point of view. A big part of what we want to do, though, is democratize the HPC space. We want there to be more and more people that can take advantage of HPC than ever before. In fact, our goal is really not to build the most powerful supercomputer in the world, although that's great. We've done things like, you know, top 500 runs and even been in the top 10 of the top 500 list. Our goal is not that. Our goal is to build a bigger and bigger community of people that can use HPC to do next generation simulation and modeling. In order to do that, it means it has to be easy to set these products up. And so HPC Server, if you haven't used it before or read about it, HPC Server provides an integrated set of tools for deploying a cluster, managing that cluster, scheduling jobs to that cluster, and diagnosing failures inside the cluster. It is the nature of distributed systems to fail. When you have 1,000 machines running, there's always going to be some chunk of those machines that are down. In fact, I spent a week working at Sandia National Labs a couple of years ago to understand how they run big-scale simulations in the National Lab environment. They considered it a victory if only 2 or 3% of those machines were down at any particular time. Remember, we run these machines hard. They are constantly being pegged in memory, disk, and network, and eventually those components are going to fail. Now, one of the things we did in Windows HPC Server to help people with these types of failures that happen in distributed systems is we built a set of diagnostic tools. And those diagnostic tools enable you to look across the entirety of the stack, all of these components that are working together. The diagnostic tools will look at the bottom of the stack. We can look at the networking infrastructure to see if there were network failures, like maybe at the switching layer or at the networking card itself that's sitting inside your server. Above that, we can look at the operating system and run diagnostic tests to prove that the operating system is operating correctly. We can look above that at the middleware that my group provides, and we can look above that at the application layer to make sure that the application is working correctly. So how do we do that at the application layer? Well, any application vendor that ships an application for HPC Server and gets our logo, they will provide a diagnostic as part of that application. So what this means is you could check to make sure that, for example, the ANSYS Fluent solver is working correctly, because there'll be a diagnostic test that ships with ANSYS Fluent that that demonstrates that the solver is working correctly. This is going to do a lot to help people identify the failures in their applications or in their clusters much faster and really reduce the amount of downtime that we have in clusters. Finally, HPC server integrates with your existing infrastructure. There are a lot of people that run Windows Server infrastructure, and our product integrates right in with all of that infrastructure. We also integrate with your existing Linux infrastructure if you're running Linux clusters through our partnerships with both platform computing and adaptive computing. So one of the ways that we can increase the number of people that take advantage of clusters is to look at the types of applications that people run. Now, if you think about the application developers, there's a pyramid here. At the top of the pyramid are people that are writing MPI codes, right? They're using Fortran and C++ and writing some of these top-end simulation codes. Below that, we see people that are writing applications using languages like C, C Sharp, Java, maybe Python, R, whatever your favorite kind of language is at that space. And that's typically where a lot of the thinking stops about who writes applications. But if you look out across the world, you'll see that people use Excel as a modeling world. If you look at Excel just right, you can kind of see that it's a programming environment. It's a place where you can create an algorithm for doing some sort of data analysis and visualize those results. It's a lot like the programming environments we have right now. So how do we help those people? Right, there are 300 million paid Excel users worldwide. There are 500 million if you count the people that don't pay, but there are 300 million people that are doing these kinds of simulations in Excel. Many of you that are listening to this presentation, you may have run into the limitation in previous versions of Excel where we only could support 65,000 rows. If you're one of those people, you're probably a good candidate for running computations out on a cluster as well. So we're enabling people to now run Excel computations across a cluster, in fact, to distribute your big Excel computations across a cluster of machines. A good example of one of our customers doing this is a company that's in the life insurance space. They capture each insurance policy as an Excel workbook. From that Excel workbook, they need to take a look at the value at risk of that set of assets. So what they'll do for each workbook is they'll predict different parts of that policy going up and going down in value. In fact, that may be maybe 1,000 calculations. Each one of those 1,000 calculations has maybe 100 different permutations. And this is across hundreds and hundreds of policies. You can see that quickly this turns into billions of calculations that need to occur. Now, this company would run this big set of computations to look at the risks associated with their portfolio. They'd run this big set of calculations every month. And it took them probably, it was on average about 4 to 5 days to complete the set of computations. What we did was help them distribute those computations out across a cluster. In fact, to run all of those workbooks across this cluster. The result was that a set of computations that went that took 4 to 5 days now takes about 4 hours. Now, this is a total change in the way they think about their business. Instead of them having end-of-month visibility into the risk of their business, they can do end-of-week or even end-of-day type calculations, giving them a totally new kind of visibility into how their business is working. This is the kind of power that you get when you can run Excel computations against a cluster in the background. The next big feature in Windows HPC Server 2008 R2 is desktop compute clouds. This is a cycle-stealing feature that we've built into Windows HPC Server, and it enables you to take idle desktops sitting in your enterprise and have them participate as part of a cluster. Now, a lot of people are sitting on their machines during the day from, say, let's say 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 or 6 o'clock at night. With this product, and with this feature in our product, you'll be able to schedule those machines to do work as part of your cluster during the night hours and during the weekend. And of course, we know that sometimes people work late, and our software is able to detect if those people are using the mouse or running any jobs on their machines at night so that we don't interfere with that. But the big change here is you can harness the hundreds or thousands of desktops as part of your enterprise into your HPC cluster, giving you even bigger scale computation. Finally, there's the cloud component. And the cloud is an interesting space for us. There's a lot of hype about the cloud, and a lot of people that are beginning to dig in and find out that maybe there's some complexities about the cloud. It's true. The cloud is going to be something that we are going to be grappling with for a long time. But even though we've identified problems with the cloud, some of us may have problems with data ingress or egress, or there may be problems with the security of the cloud, or certification, or how we use HIPAA data, or any other kind of personally identifiable information in the cloud, even though we have all of these issues, we should keep in mind that we're right at the beginning of cloud computing. Back in the 90s, the first Beowulf cluster was set up in NASA. This is the first time that somebody took a bunch of commodity PCs, wired them up with what was probably 10 megabit Ethernet, and ran a big supercomputing job on them. And at that point, I'm sure a lot of people said, oh my god, this is never going to work. First, MPI is way too hard to program. Or, wow, you can never do anything on 10 megabit Ethernet. That's not going to be successful. Or this commodity server stuff is not going to work. You know, HPC is all about Cray and SGI and gigantic big iron supercomputing. But by any measure of success, that original Beowulf computing model has been wildly successful. If you look at the top 500 list, most of the supercomputers on that list are cluster-based systems. If you look at just x86 server sales, it's been hugely influenced by the revolution with Beowulf computing. I would suggest that the cloud is kind of like Beowulf 2.0, and we're right at the beginning. There are a lot of things that are broken, but as an industry, we are going to make some huge transitions. We may find, for example, that GPU computing is an important part of the way that the cloud works, and we'll see the cloud having GPU nodes in the next couple of years. It could be that we're going to change the way that the interconnects work, or we're going to make some fundamental changes in the way that data works. All of these things are possible, and it would be a mistake for us to think about the cloud as it exists right now as being the same thing as the cloud that will exist in the next 2 to 3 years. Microsoft is bringing a number of different assets to the cloud. First, we have Windows Azure. And Windows Azure provides compute and storage infrastructure for the most demanding types of computational workloads. We have a customer now that's running thousands and thousands of Azure instances at night as part of a set of computational finance models. We also have SQL Azure, and SQL Azure provides structured storage for people that are doing database computations in the cloud. This is the same as the way that you use SQL right now. It provides that same kind of relational model, but it provides it up in the cloud, and all of that data is accessible from your Windows Azure compute nodes. Finally, something that we announced at the Worldwide Partner Conference is the Windows Azure Appliance. The Windows Azure Appliance gives you all of the great Azure tools on-premise. There are a number of our customers that, for whatever reason, cannot export their computations to the public cloud. It could be that you have personally identifiable information, and that data has to be kept on-premise. There are certain nations in the world where some of the data that's generated in those nations cannot be exported. For example, some Middle Eastern countries will not allow you to export seismic data about where oil is in those countries outside of that country. It all has to be computed within that country. For all of these customers that have sensitive issues about running computations in a public cloud, we are creating the Windows Azure Appliance. This will give you all the power of our cloud computing infrastructure on your terms. Windows Azure Dallas is a new market for people that are selling data. There are some big data sets that are very interesting for people to kind of mash up. And this allows the data providers to sell that data to people that are building applications in the cloud. This is going to be a great opportunity for people that want to maybe integrate, if you were in finance, BATS data that provides financial stock tick information, with maybe a set of curves for foreign exchange rates that may be provided by another vendor. You'll be able to mash those two things up with your own set of algorithms and gain new types of insights about how the financial world works. So I hope you've seen that Microsoft has a number of different assets that we can bring to bear as we take technical computing to the next level. It's not just about the HPC side of things. It's really about how do we enable developers, the broad community of developers, to embrace multi-core programming. And then how do we take those multi-core applications and run them across clusters? And finally, taking those cluster applications and running them in the cloud. If we're able to do that, you'll see a new capacity for technical computing emerge. We will be able to do new types of simulation and new types of modeling that previously were impossible, either because we didn't have the scale of computing that was necessary for those computations, or because we have people that were not able to access those resources in the past, that deploying a cluster was too difficult. And for those people, we've made cluster deployment easier, and we're providing the cloud, which makes it very easy for running those scale computations. So thank you very much for your time today, and good luck at this next level of technical computation.